to better opportunities and money. More often, constantly sending the message that you won't do something because it's not your job sends a red flag, in some cases a black flag, to those around you, including your bosses and customers. Avoiding any responsibility that is not yours wears you down, and your own aspirations can diminish. If you never step out of your defined role, you never get a chance to interact with different people, ideas, and processes. To the person who says, "That's not my job," I would ask, you have no desire to solve a problem or improve yourself with knowledge outside the minimum required to do your job, so you have no interest in advancing your career? I've always called these types of people skids, because they skid through life, never growing, never learning, never being an example, never becoming leaders or special. Do you want to advance? Do you want to improve yourself and grow your knowledge? Ask yourself, can I learn from this? Can I benefit from it and advance myself? What if your assistant gets sick and his or her replacement is incompetent? What if you're working late and no one is around? You think the janitor is going to get you a cup of coffee? Think again. You have to make your own coffee, buddy. Being uninvolved and not knowledgeable has serious consequences. How can you run the business if you are not involved and engaged? How can you grow, improve your life, and become an example for your friends and family when your chances to grow pass with the moments? Why do you want to run a business or work in an industry if you do not want to be involved in its very core? You say you simply want to own a business but not run it? I say owners have to understand their businesses so that they can take them to their potential in today's changing market forces and trends. I worked with a fellow who owned a restaurant for 10 years. One day I stopped by and opened the kitchen's large refrigerator. All sorts of items were rotten or rotting. Produce, meat, and dairy. It was disgusting. I said to him, "What if one of your investors saw this? When was the last time you checked your own kitchen?" He told me he hadn't looked in the fridge or the kitchen in years. How could that be? His answer? I leave kitchen management and ordering to my chef. Food is the second highest cost center of a restaurant. Labor is first. Think about it. Any owner who does not understand the practices and results of his highest cost center is either lazy or a fool. Learning for longevity and success. In a study of 356 U.S. companies between 2000 and 2010, Professor Xuming Lo of the University of Texas measured the value and volatility of stock returns and the strength of relationships between employees and customers. He discovered that the average shelf life of positive performance for executives is about 5 years. He also found that the longer an executive or manager stays with the company, the further the relationship with her customers declines. As a CEO becomes more established and comfortable, she relies on colleagues and managers for insight instead of continuing to learn directly from customers. What I take from this research is that for anyone to succeed over the long term, knowledge must be direct. We can't depend on others' interpretations of what's going on in our business. You may not be the CEO of a large company, but you are the CEO of your own life. No matter what role you have in your industry, whether you are a boss, a middle manager, or just starting out, learn to listen, go to the source, and dig deeply to understand what information is true and what is not true. In my experience, the other reason why performance declines over the years is that people, bosses, entrepreneurs, and workers alike, tend to become fixed in their thinking. According to my interpretation of Carol S. Dweck's book, Mindset, openness to learning begins with developing a growth mindset as opposed to a fixed mindset. A growth mindset is one that is open to the new and unknown, and a fixed mindset is one that assumes we have a certain amount of intelligence and it cannot be increased. This is all in your head. You're in control over whether you will be growth-oriented or set in your ways. Here are 10 ways to develop a growth mindset. 1. Practice active curiosity. Question more. 2. Embrace challenges. 3. Listen and learn from criticism. 4. Don't lose your connection to your customers or stakeholders. Get rid of the middleman and go directly to the source for information. 5. Try to learn something new every week. 6. Keep yourself fresh and avoid getting too comfortable by seeking out opinions and knowledge from new sources. 7. Always ask yourself if what you believe about your business is really true. 8. Don't automatically accept conventional wisdom. 9. Don't accept anything at face value. Dig deeper. 10. Change your scenery. Take a different route to work. Travel to a new place. Shake up your perspective. Don't wait until you know everything to start, because you're never going to know everything. Too often we let our uncertainties about whether we have what it takes to succeed run our lives. As a result, we tend to avoid new challenges or decline to pursue exciting opportunities that could take us to new levels of personal or professional success and happiness, all because we don't trust our own ability to rise to the challenges that are involved. Remember, effort leads to mastery. You've definitely been smart enough to accomplish something that was initially scary to you, whether that was starting a new job, writing a plan for a brand new business, taking a risk by asking for a raise, taking a class to learn a new skill, or doing anything you've never tried before. Don't think for a second that you're not smart enough to make a needed change again. Figure out what it is you need to know to move forward, and then find a way to acquire the knowledge. Don't underestimate your abilities and buy into self-doubt. When you see a gap in your understanding, it's an opportunity to grow and expand. Not doing so is really about fear. The fear of looking like a jerk, the fear of screwing up, the fear of being ashamed and embarrassed. None of it is true. One way of figuring out where you have knowledge gaps is through active self-teaching. My first bar job was at a Colorado steakhouse when I was studying anthropology at the University of Denver. I didn't know how to make the drinks customers ordered. There was no internet, no Google. I had to learn from my customers. I had to learn how to make the drinks while I was making them. It was clear to me what I knew and what I didn't know. When I became a consultant in the hospitality business, people would pay me to do a study and a business plan for a restaurant, bar, entertainment venue, or hotel. While I knew a lot about hotels and bars, being a consultant was a different role, and I was now in an advisory capacity. I was not their boss, so they were not forced to listen to me. Instead, I had to be prepared to prove everything I recommended and establish my credibility every week. To make certain my work was bulletproof and thorough, I wrote a 30 to 40 page study for each client to make sure everything was fully conceived and detailed. Now, more than 30 years later, I still do the same detailed document for every client, and my Taffer Dynamics market studies and business growth plans are renowned industry standards. That meant I had to learn demographics and psychographics, the study of consumer behavior, personality, values, opinions, attitudes, interests, and lifestyles. I learned how to develop competitive assessments and marketing instructions. It was incredibly eye-opening and valuable information, especially as I continued to grow as a hospitality consultant. I never chose to learn any of these things. It happened because I took on bigger responsibilities and was willing to learn what I didn't know as I went along. I didn't wait to learn about psychographics before becoming a consultant. I was willing to fly without landing gear. When I took a job at the famed but now defunct All Seasons Full Service Resort Grossingers in the early 1980s, I didn't have any experience running a 2,600-seat dining room in an American Plan hotel. That means customers pay a single daily rate that covers their room and all their unlimited meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Therefore, the dining room was very busy. In addition, Grossinger's was kosher, so I had to separate meat and dairy kitchens, with rabbis running around inspecting everything we did. I didn't know anything about resort hotels, convention centers, hosting religious events, headliner entertainment and shows, ski lodges, kosher kitchens, 18-hole golf courses and clubhouses, swimming pools, outside catering, or being the manager on duty of a 1,700-room, 1,200-acre property. I was interviewed at the resort by Mark Grossinger Attes. Mark was a superstar with great presence. Even so, somehow I convinced him, and myself, that I could do it, and was hired as the highest non-family executive at the property. I did do it, and became quite close to the family during those years. The Grossinger family, particularly Elaine and Mark Grossinger Attes, were huge influences on my career. Mark later became Donald Trump's vice president in Atlantic City, where he led the development of Trump's Taj Mahal Hotel. Unfortunately, years later, Mark was killed with several other executives when Trump's helicopter crashed on the Garden State Parkway. Being entrepreneurial, I knew I could learn on the job and adapt to what was happening at any given moment. Agility is crucial when you learn while doing. I took risks and made it my personal responsibility to figure out how to deliver on my promise to run the resort properly. I managed to maintain my credibility without showing ignorance. I asked the right questions. I listened. I didn't show weakness. And I didn't talk about things I didn't know about. Because of all this, the family and the department heads respected me, supported me, and helped me learn what I didn't know. During a consulting job, I met a woman I'll call Carol, who was a managing partner at one of the nation's top consulting firms. Carol told me she had declined offers to take on a senior leadership role in her firm for years. She told herself that she just did not have the capacity, skills, or knowledge to succeed, and that if she took the new role, she would embarrass herself and become a disappointment to her boss and her colleagues. Fortunately, her boss knew she had the ability to do the job well, and so he offered the job over and over until she finally and hesitatingly accepted. After she accepted the job, Carol sat down and analyzed the requirements of the role. She then made two lists, one of the things she already knew how to do and the other of the things she would have to learn. The leadership at her company, who believed in her potential, set her up in training programs. A senior executive mentored her for the first few months on the job. Carol also did job-related reading and research at night and sought the advice of people who were already doing the job. She took a couple of courses, which the company was happy to pay for, to augment what she learned on the job and from her own studying. In retrospect, Carol said, she had believed her own lies about her abilities, but was able to overcome them when she stopped making excuses about her ability to add to her knowledge base. If you truly think you are not good enough to do something that seems more difficult than what you are comfortably doing now, ask yourself what it is you think you don't know. We all have the capacity to learn new things and to master new skills. If you really don't know something, figure out who or what can teach you what you need to know. A friend of mine recently told me a story about her niece. The 17-year-old applied for an entry-level service job at Panera, the popular soup and sandwich place. She had a group interview with four other candidates of similar age and education. None had previous work experience, so the playing field was level. The interviewer asked each candidate why he or she wanted to work at Panera. My friend's niece replied, "I like the food here. It's great quality. And I think for that reason it would be a great place to work." Well, okay, it's a reason, but it's not the best one she could have come up with. Another candidate had clearly done a little research online before the interview. He explained that he respected the restaurant's "food as it should be" mission and how it sought out the freshest ingredients. He talked about the history of the company and its philosophy and expressed admiration for those principles. He told the interviewer that he wanted to learn more about how the company followed through on its promise to customers and was looking forward to learning how he could contribute to that promise. No surprise, the boy got the job. The information he included in his answer is available on the company website. No magic, no nepotism, no discrimination, just a bit of learning. It made all the difference for him in getting the job over the other candidates. It's shocking how many people don't put forth even this small effort. I know, because I've been on the other side of the table interviewing people who didn't know the most basic information about working behind a bar or taking an order from a customer. Honestly, that's just being lazy. In my job interviews, I always ask the candidate about my business, our specialties, and what we do. If they did not take the time to learn anything about the company, they do not have the discipline or desire to work for it, and therefore, for me. Access what's available and devote the right resources to learning. So many resources exist, from online courses to old-fashioned night school, mentoring opportunities, and training programs. There is no reason you can't learn new things anytime and at any age. Learning can be as simple as finding someone whom you admire and studying how they do things. The motivational speaker Tony Robbins says that the greatest way to find success is to learn and mimic a successful person. If you want to be a great financier, study Warren Buffett. If you want to be an amazing tennis player, practice and analyze Serena and Venus Williams's techniques. The people who teach you don't even have to be alive. I am inspired by Thomas Jefferson's ability to develop relationships and bring people together rather than pull them apart. Billionaire aviator, film producer, and business tycoon Howard Hughes had the ability to provide a vision, then delegate it and execute it through a team. I admire and learn from that. Massive open online courses, or MOOCs, have made all sorts of information easily accessible. From YouTube videos that tell you how to do everything from rewiring a lamp to restoring a vintage car to online courses at Ivy League colleges like Stanford on subjects as diverse as constitutional law and children's nutrition, there's no reason continuous learning can't be a part of your everyday life. If you think you don't want to learn about a subject because you didn't enjoy school or weren't good at it, remember that now you are choosing subjects that interest you. What are you curious about? If you are interested in a subject, learning about it is going to be a pleasure. Teaching has also evolved and become more dynamic and experiential. Find teachers who inspire you. They're out there. Here are just a few of the ever-expanding resources available. iTunes U, a section of Apple's iTunes Music Store, is dedicated to providing educational audio and video files from universities, museums, and media organizations. Participating institutions include Stanford, UC Berkeley, University of Melbourne, Texas A&M, MIT, Yale, and Trinity College Dublin. The Beyond Campus section of iTunes U provides free educational content from American Public Media, PBS, the Museum of Modern Art, and the Smithsonian. The Khan Academy offers free practice exercises and instructional videos in math, science, computer programming, history, art history, economics, and other subjects. Khan has partnered with institutions like NASA, the Museum of Modern Art, the California Academy of Sciences, and MIT to offer specialized content. The OEDB, Open Education Database, is the most comprehensive collection of online free courses anywhere. It features more than 10,000 free open courses and interactive resources from top universities around the world. Harvard Extension School features free online education courses from Harvard University. Open Yale courses, UC Berkeley Class Central, MIT OpenCourseWare, Carnegie Mellon Open Learning Initiative, University of London podcasts, and University of Oxford podcasts are all offered for free. Imagine getting an Ivy League level education at your own pace, from home or anywhere, for free. There are dozens of other free websites that offer similar coursework on just about any subject you can think of, including Coursera, Open Culture Online Courses, Udemy, Academic Earth, edX, Allison, Codecademy, Score, and many more. And there are new resources added to the internet all the time. There are also many low-cost learning organizations, institutions, and opportunities available out there. Getting certifications in your profession can be an important investment if they help you earn certain levels of achievement and credibility. If passing a real estate test and getting your real estate license means you can start your own agency and make more money, what are you waiting for? It amazes me that there are people who are willing to travel hundreds and sometimes thousands of miles to attend a conference to see me in person, but are more hesitant to make a small investment that requires no travel to learn from TVT, Taffer Virtual Teaching, my on-demand learning tool with more than 60 on-demand online lessons for hospitality industry owners, managers, and service staff, complete testing, and Taffer certifications. Nearly every industry offers similar on-demand virtual teaching programs. These are great investments because they let you work at your own speed and conform them to your schedule. Plus, most educational programs are tax-deductible. If a master's degree or a professional degree like an MBA will help you get a better job, it's worth the time and money to get it, especially because you can do that from home now, too. There is absolutely no reason why you cannot expand your expertise, learn new skills, and improve your business chops, even if you work full-time. Here are my top tips for becoming a continuous learner. 1. Own what you don't know and make it a point to educate yourself. Don't assume you know enough to continue to grow and succeed. You don't. 2. Make a list of what you need to know to evolve your career or your life. Try to check one of those things off the list once a month. Review and update it monthly. 3. Find someone you admire and learn how he became a success. Do what he does. It doesn't matter whether you know him or not. We can learn about how famous people have become successful without ever standing next to them. 4. Before meeting someone important to your business or going on a job interview, do your homework. Understand the background and mission of the person or business and learn what questions to ask. 5. Devote at least 15 minutes a day to learning something new and continuing your education. For instance, read a chapter of a book on a subject you are learning to master, read articles, or listen to a podcast. Practice your skills. Take the time to perfect making 2 new cocktails if you work in a bar, or practice the guitar if that is your passion. Whatever you are pursuing, you can carve out 15 minutes a day to do it. Learn from those you serve. Learning from your customers is vital to your success. Even if you work in a back office or don't deal directly with the public, you are serving someone in your job. You have a boss, and the boss is really your customer, right? You have to think of the people you work for, and if you have a job, you work for someone, as customers. Doing so gives you greater buy-in to the idea that your job is part of a bigger universe. It's not just you toiling away on a computer making sure the numbers add up, or whatever it is you do. Someone somewhere is counting on you to hold up your end of the bargain and to do your job better, and you can learn from that person or people. Customers, whatever form they take, are not unchanging automatons who continue to behave the same way year after year. That is particularly true today, when social media, information connectedness, and greater mobility offer nearly limitless options for how people shop, consume, and spend time. It's your job to keep up with your consumers and to continuously learn from them so you can keep your core, add new customers, and lure back once loyal defectors. When Elizabeth DeRose wrote to J. Crew to complain about their latest line of clothing, which she felt had veered too far from the company's classic and timeless style, she had no idea that its CEO, Millard Mickey Drexler, would read the note personally and then pick up the phone to call her. Elizabeth's husband, Chris DeRose, co-author of Judgment on the Front Line, How Smart Companies Win by Trusting Their People, gives an account of the interaction in Forbes. Apparently, Elizabeth's email about the company's 2013 collection prompted Drexler to respond to her criticism in fewer than 24 hours. How many CEOs do you know who do this? J. Crew's leadership asked Chris's wife what she liked and didn't like about the company's new vision and listened. Drexler also defended his commitment to continually evolve the brand, but admitted that some recent choices might have strayed too far from J. Crew's timeless style, which had alienated many long-standing customers. Drexler noted that he had visited J. Crew retail stores and could sense customers' dissatisfaction with some of the new styles. "We are on it for sure," he later emailed Chris's wife. "I hope you see a difference this fall." Understanding what customers want provides a frontline education and gives you insights that show up on a P&L, profit and loss statement, later, when it could be too late. We don't like to connect falling profits to customer reactions, but they are intimately connected. J. Crew's pursuit of customer feedback is remarkable because so few companies, large and small alike, do it. We may talk about customer feedback, but how many of us really act on it? Engage on social media. If you don't regularly monitor your own social media pages for customer research and reactions, start now. It's amazing to me that so many insightful and rich conversations take place on social media pages, and owners either ignore them or don't take them seriously as an indication of how people feel about their businesses. Comments, conversation threads, shares, likes, and retweets show you what people are thinking about and what is really important to them. You might be going in the wrong direction while the right one is blazing across the internet, only you're too stubborn or distracted to notice. Customer conversations can also tell you if your branding strategies are working. Are customers getting it or missing the point? If they are missing the point, that's your problem, not theirs. There is an independent website called barrescueupdates.com that I believe was originally created to beat the hell out of my rescues because the people who started the site expected them to fail. At the end of the day, 70% or more of our rescues succeed, so it was hard for the writers to be negative. The site became reasonably fair, and I find it an interesting place for information about my audience. Fans chat and say how they feel. I'm on Twitter during almost every episode of Bar Rescue, when I'm not taping or traveling. Being there to hear my audience's reaction to me and my work is very important to me. As a professional who always wants to do better, I can't imagine not seeking out and considering audience opinions and feedback. What people say and how they feel are very important to me. Paying regular attention to review sites like TripAdvisor and Yelp and to comments on your Facebook and Twitter accounts should be a regular part of your learning. Forums, Reddit, and LinkedIn groups are also potential resources for customer information. Your customers dwell in these places, and the level of discourse and discussion found there is often detailed and informative. Tools such as the free service Social Mention helps you track conversations about your brand that are happening in real time. Google Alerts also helps you keep track of mentions of your brand or products. I believe that you should engage and respond to both critical and praiseful people on social media, or personally if it is possible to reach out to a happy or unhappy customer. It's profitable to do so. It's also proper courtesy. A survey of more than 3,000 customers done by consulting firm Bain found that people who engage with companies on social media spend 20 to 40% more money with those companies than people who don't interact. When you see social media comments from people about your business, they are most likely from paying customers. Don't throw away the chance and money to learn from them and make them happy. However, you have to be careful when talking online to customers. Canned responses on social media and review sites don't fool anyone and are in fact insulting. For instance, on the popular travel website TripAdvisor, when someone leaves a negative review, some establishments, whether a restaurant, hotel, or recreational facility, leave obvious auto-responses. For instance, a large hotel chain leaves this response every time they receive a one-star review on TripAdvisor. On behalf of our entire team, I would like to apologize for not exceeding your expectations. Your satisfaction is important to us, and we will be using the feedback you gave us to implement improvements to ensure we offer a better experience for guests in the future. I hope that you will consider staying with us again so that we can have another chance to provide you with a superior experience. If I can provide any assistance, please don't hesitate to contact me directly at phone number. Sincerely, General Manager's name. How did I know it was canned? First, the same exact message was left for every one-star review. Further, one person left a very positive review but gave the review itself only one star, probably a typo, and the reviewer received the same reply from the hotel. That's a sign that the hotel has a system that automatically leaves that response for any one-star review, regardless of what the review itself actually says. None of these responses dealt with any of the varied and specific complaints in the comments. Readers are left feeling as if the actual issues were not being dealt with. It's just lip service. In this sense, disingenuous, generic responses can be more destructive than not responding at all, because people don't believe them. If you are going to respond to critical remarks, do so graciously and with replies that refer to the specific issues customers describe. Let them know what you are going to do about it, and offer to discuss the problem with the customer personally. Respond to positive comments in the same individual fashion. Other readers notice how you respond to both critics and fans, and this does contribute to the overall impression they have of your business. According to research done by American Express, 70% of Americans are willing to spend an average of 13% more with companies they believe provide excellent customer service. Any interaction with customers online should demonstrate an authentic interest in resolving problems and providing great experiences. Observe and listen. A fancy name for watching your customers and interpreting their behavior is ethnographic research. You may not have the kind of budget required to hire an anthropologist to report back from the field, but there is no reason why you can't do what J.Crew CEO Mickey Drexler does. If you have a physical location with customers, mingle with them, watch, Listen and engage. Listen to what they say and notice how they react to and interact with your product. Observation and curiosity made me a successful hotel manager in the 1980s before I started my consulting business. Every day I walked my properties, filling the coffee cups in the dining room and asking how customer stays were going. I had to be belly to belly, look in their eyes, and feel how they felt. I wanted to see their faces when they ate the food. Comment cards served a purpose, but only a small percentage of people filled them out, and what they said generally represented extremes, both negative and positive. If there was a problem, for example, if a patron didn't like the steak, I would say, no problem, let's get you another steak. I would bring it to him myself, and then circle back later to find out if the second steak was satisfactory. This is not just a chance to right something wrong, but a chance to connect. Face-to-face interaction gives you a richer, more meaningful, and more accurate picture of how customers feel about your business. Don't miss out on the opportunity to connect directly with people and learn from them. It is not just the guests I was interested in. I wanted to know how my employees felt, too. Sure, I could hear it from my department managers, but I knew they were not going to give me a full, accurate picture. It's not because they were deceptive or trying to hide things from me, although some were. They were giving me their points of view, and because I was the boss, they always wanted to put a positive spin on things. I would run the dish machine with the dishwasher, or stand with the line cook while he chopped tomatoes. I saw this as an opportunity to connect with the team. When they were slammed, I helped them. I'd grab a broom and sweep the floors with them. As I did these things, we talked in a setting that was familiar and comfortable for them, and I was able to gather a great deal of information about how they felt about the way the kitchen was being run. I would have lunch with the housekeeping staff every week. There would be 30 or 40 housekeepers and me. It was the best way to find out where the carpets were wearing out or if the furniture needed to be replaced. Housekeeping staff members in hotels are under constant pressure to perform, so next time you get good service, acknowledge it. Housekeeping staff work very hard. In the hotels I manage, we expected housekeepers to turn over a room in 18 minutes, which is not unusual. It was imperative that I knew what the problems were because problems cost time. Using the wrong chemicals, not having the proper tools, running out of supplies, improperly set up maid's carts, all of these missteps cost time. If we could figure out how to drive the time down to 16 minutes per room, even better. If I wanted my staff to want to drive down their turnover time, I had to connect with them regularly. They had to know I cared, respected what they did, and provided the tools they needed to be successful. How could I accomplish anything as a manager if I didn't sit with them and achieve it with them? Ask questions. If you don't have a physical location, find other ways to interact. J. Cruz Drexler called customers, something you can do too, if and when appropriate. What would happen if you called 5 dissatisfied customers each month? What problems would you learn about and solve? On the flip side, what if you also called 5 happy customers and learned about why they like the business and what keeps them coming back? Imagine the wealth of material you could get from just 5 people. Perhaps more insights and ideas than an entire crew of PhDs in anthropology could come up with after a year in the field. Better yet, it wouldn't cost you a dime. You can also use surveys and questionnaires to get insights into the feelings, needs, desires, and behaviors of customers as an alternative to first-hand observation. Anonymous surveys may produce more honest responses than those in which the person is identified. When designing a survey, keep questions specific and geared toward getting the information you want to know. Don't waste your customers' time. Keep the survey as short as possible while still making it enjoyable, useful, and pertinent. Sites like SurveyMonkey allow you to design surveys to measure customer feelings, measure benchmarks, and gather material about consumer habits. Years ago, I conducted a satisfaction survey with customers. At the same time, I conducted an employee survey asking them what they thought customer opinions were. The disconnect was incredible. My employees believed one thing, and my customers believed another. Listening to your employees is helpful. Listening to your customers is everything. Expanding your learning via asking questions isn't something you can do only with customers. You can ask questions of your managers, people who report to you, your colleagues, your friends, and your family. Bullshit Buster. Larry Ruvo. Larry Ruvo, co-founder, chairman, and senior managing director of Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits of Nevada, has been a part of the wine and spirits distribution business in Las Vegas since 1970. He spent the early part of his professional life working at the Venetian Restaurant, owned by his parents, and managing the Los Angeles Playboy Club, as well as stints at the Sahara Hotel, Caesar's Palace, and the Frontier Hotel, before starting a liquor distributorship with Steve Wynn. That business eventually grew into the distributor Southern Wine and Spirits of Nevada, and is now called Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits of Nevada. Larry also established UN El Vino, one of the largest annual wine tasting events in the country. In addition to his business leadership, he's also well known in the Las Vegas community for his philanthropy, particularly his dedication to finding a cure for Alzheimer's disease, something his father suffered from. Larry is also chairman and co-founder of Keep Memory Alive and the Cleveland Clinic Lou Ruvo Center for Brain Health, for which he devotes his time and energy to finding a cure for Alzheimer's and other neurodegenerative diseases. I have so much respect for Larry. In my 40 years in the hospitality business, there are very few people who have affected me as profoundly as he has, and in such a short time. I met Larry about a year ago, and the love and affection I have for him now is immense. He has inspired me as a business person and a philanthropist. He is my role model. Larry excels in his personal life, touching so many with his commitment to helping people and his community virtually every day. Larry and his organization support more than 300 charitable causes each year. His commitment to helping those in need is greater than anyone I've met. Because of Larry, I have been moved to contribute to Keep Memory Alive and to become involved as a member of the Board of Trustees of St. Jude's Ranch for Children, all because of my desire to emulate his goodness. Larry has taught me a great deal, and I respect his wisdom. He learned early on that it is unwise to be too confident about what you know and don't know, and that one's education never ends. Larry grew up working at his parents' Italian restaurant in Las Vegas. As a kid, he did a variety of things there, grated cheese, washed pans, bussed tables. By the time he was a teen, he thought he knew everything about the restaurant. So when a chef who Larry thought had been drinking argued with him, he took matters into his own hands and fired him. Larry was 14 at the time. The decision wasn't very popular with the actual owners, Mom and Dad, Larry recalls. My father came to work and said, "I understand you fired the chef." "Never fire a chef on Friday, Larry. We need him for the weekend, so hire him back." We sat down at this tiny table, and I told John I had made a mistake and I needed to bring him back. I apologized and told him I had acted too quickly, knowing he would be fired on Monday. So I thought. My father said to him, "John, you are hired back and you are now promoted to general manager. Now I want you to fire my son." Larry's father taught him an important lesson about not knowing everything, and that there was a price to pay for the arrogance of thinking you did. "It was a big moment in my life," Larry says. After that incident, Larry never worked for his father again. Instead, he went to work as a busboy at the Sahara on the Las Vegas Strip and found other jobs as he developed and learned about the hospitality business. He never forgot the lesson his father had taught him, and even today he applies it to his successful distributorship. It's a lesson he makes sure is instilled in all the people who work with and for him at Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits. "I don't believe one person has the ability to do hiring," he says. "Multiple people do an interview. It's a team that we put together so we can gather a variety of opinions. They see things I may not see, and vice versa." Larry puts an emphasis on all of his employees being people who are open to learning because, as he says, turnover is expensive, and he wants his businesses to be places to learn and share. The openness also helps people become smarter managers and business people in the end. "Inexperienced managers like I was at 14 do a lot of damage," he said. "That's why no one has the authority to fire a person on the spot. We have to know it's not emotional. It's not personality. There has to be a legitimate work-related reason to let someone go. We want to make sure of that." Larry also learned a key lesson about not making excuses about learning. He was the only child in a family that had very little money, and he had to figure out how to do things on his own. My father always told me, when your mom and I are gone, who will be there if you cannot pay the rent? No one. If something breaks, learn how to fix it yourself, because if you wait for a mechanic to come, they may not show up. That's how I have lived my life. You need to get that rent check together yourself. You have to learn to repair what's broken, Larry says. That learning comes in part from asking questions. If Larry had asked his father about the chef before firing him, he might not have been released from the family business at such a young age. Now, Larry makes sure his own employees know that asking questions is not frowned upon, but rather the way you take control of your own destiny. We provide a great amount of resources for our people to be successful, so if they fail, it's because they didn't ask questions, Larry says of his company. Ask questions. Ask for help. If I don't know the answer, I'll find the answer. But you have to ask the question first. Too often people are embarrassed to raise their hands, and those are the people who are no longer with us or no longer successful. Bullshit Buster, Jim Zampone. In the northeast corner of Pennsylvania, in the tiny hamlet of Lakeville, sits a factory, Supreme Zipper Industries, a full-service zipper manufacturer and supply company. When owner and CEO Jim Zampone became involved in the zipper business in 2001, it was dying, as were other manufacturing industries in the United States. Jim was 31, and just coming to terms with the fact that his passion for carpentry would not sustain him long-term, as back problems made it next to impossible for him to continue to build things. He had to find something else to do, something that would hold his interest and support his growing family. One day, while at an appointment with his optometrist, the conversation turned to his life situation. Dr. Rosenberg, who knew Jim well, suggested he meet with his father, Saul, who owned a zipper company. Jim had nothing to lose, so he went up to a tiny loft on 28th Street in New York City to meet Saul, a wisp of a man wearing a beautiful suit, custom shirt, and cufflinks. Saul had been Supreme Zipper's sole proprietor since 1950. The company had gone from several hundred employees in the 1960s to a 100-year-old man in an 800-square-foot loft buying and selling zippers in 2001, Jim recalls. The zipper industry was highly segmented at this point as well. Some zipper companies made only zippers for garments, others made industrial zippers, or zippers for furniture, and so on. No factory was making zippers for all industries. Jim thought that he could revive the business by becoming a one-stop shop for zipper needs across users, but to change the industry and the way things had been done for years, he needed to learn, and fast. I had to understand the furniture trade, the boat cover business, garment making, industrial zipper needs, everything, Jim says. It was a huge learning curve, particularly since I had been a carpenter and not a manufacturer. If he was going to grow the business and teach other people how to do this as well, it needed to start with him. Jim did know how to build things and was mechanically minded. How different could building a staircase be from creating a zipper? There was only one way to find out. He started his learning from scratch by first learning how to make a simple zipper. He took it apart and put it back together again. He asked Saul about zipper making and studied zippers in all their variations. There was and is no zipper university, so teaching himself was the only choice. Continuous learning is a hallmark of the company. Today, if Supreme doesn't make a zipper, or if someone comes to them with a need that has never been filled, Jim figures out a way to get it made, even if it means developing it from scratch, which can take a lot of trial and error. In order for this to work, Jim says, he's made sure everyone in his company knows that they have the freedom to make mistakes while trying to learn something new and solve a problem, and that they won't be penalized for trying. I don't like my employees to be afraid to tell me there was a mistake. I don't place blame unless it is something blatant, Jim says. Instead, I ask how we can go forward so we avoid this problem. He also makes it a point to tell employees that solving problems is a group responsibility. Everyone should be paying attention to the final product. It's amazing how many nuances we have ironed out by giving every person the ability to stop everything if they see something wrong, he says. It's important for the employees to know that, because once we hand off a shipment to UPS, We have no way to fix it. We try to be perfect when it goes out the door. I don't care if the last person before the truck comes is the one who says something is wrong. We have to unpack the boxes and fix it. But I want my people to feel that I will solve the problem with them. Usually the same problem does not happen again. Because Supreme has a culture of continuous learning, Jim can handle oddball requests that many of his competitors cannot. One customer came to him with a request for a 100-foot-long zipper made of heavy-gauge plastic that would be used to protect expensive helicopter cables. Another asked him to make a zipper that was water-resistant on both sides. Although these projects weren't part of their bread and butter, Jim and his staff were willing to put in the work to tackle new products and accommodate their customers. This kind of attention and willingness to experiment and learn has helped Supreme stay ahead of its competitors, including those in China, and stay relevant in a business that's harder to succeed in today. Jim attributes the whatever-it-takes attitude to a lesson he learned in his youth. When I was 16, I teamed up with an older cousin who was in his 40s in the carpentry business, he says. He taught me about POTJ, part of the job. It doesn't matter if you are the carpenter. If you make a mess, clean it up. Do what you need to do to make the business work. At Supreme, it was rough in the beginning for people who didn't understand that idea, but I think you learn more and you remain on top of things when you are willing to do whatever is necessary. Bullshit Buster, Maria Menounos. New England native Maria Menounos is an Emmy-winning journalist, an actress, a television host, an author, a part-time professional wrestler, an entrepreneur, and an industry disruptor. Maria has had an amazing career trajectory due to her own persistence, willingness to learn, tenacity for constant improvement, and enthusiasm for trying new things. Not bad for a kid from a lower middle-class background with no connections in the TV world. She graduated from Emerson College in Boston in 2000. During her senior year, she worked as a reporter for Channel One News. In 2002, she caught the eye of executives at Entertainment Tonight, and at just 23 years old, became the youngest person ever to host the iconic show. In 2005, she joined NBC to report and host Access Hollywood, The Today Show, and Nightly News while continuing to act. In 2014, Maria signed a multi-year contract with E! To host and produce several programs, including hosting E! News. She also hosts Conversations with Maria, a daily top-rated one-hour radio show on SiriusXM Stars Channel, and NCM's Newvie, a cinema pre-show seen daily on over 70% of America's movie screens. Along with partner Kevin Undergaro, Maria founded and currently serves as the CEO of the AfterBuzz TV Network, a digital broadcast net that produces aftershows for favorite TV shows. I was an outsider to show business and had to learn so much the hard way, she says. For that reason, I'm super sensitive to what young people have to endure on the way up, and I try to give as many of them the education I didn't have. As sensitive as I am to their plight, I know young people still have to put in the work. They have to make wise choices, be humble, open to training, positive, ever-evolving, and resilient. Most of all, they have to own up to and accept responsibility for their shortcomings and to never make excuses for when things go awry. That's usually toughest for any of us. It's easy to blame everyone and everything and not ourselves. The latter takes security and courage. However, when you don't embrace excuses, when you instead embrace solutions, you get success. Just like John says on Bar Rescue. That is a success mentality. When I started my radio show, we went through a difficult process initially. The woman I hired as my producer, Lauren Legrazzo, had told me that radio was her dream. The problem was that Lauren had no experience in the medium. However, I hired her because I believe in hiring for heart over skill, and still do. For Lauren's tremendous passion and raw talent, she made her share of mistakes our first year, as any rookie would. At first there was frustration on both ends and excuses for the errors, but her heart prevailed. In time, Lauren found the courage to admit shortcomings and the strength to hang in. She resolved to create daily solutions. Today, she is literally one of the best producers in all of SiriusXM, says Maria. When she looks back at her own career, Maria says she wishes more people had pulled her aside and told her what she was doing wrong, because it would have saved pain and suffering and helped her grow. In our business, people are fearful to tell you the truth and can even be dishonest. It would have been better to hear what mistakes I was making so I could have been given the opportunity to make adjustments. This is why it's important to educate your employees before you dismiss or fire them. Many just need to be exposed to the lessons. The ones with heart will stick around, but it's on the employer to teach them. If people aren't giving you the unvarnished reality and constructive feedback, though, it's up to you to go ask for it. No one would tell me, so I put myself out there and asked for the truth, she says. Maria and I are close friends who share many personal feelings. I know her heart and really appreciate what she says about teaching and guiding people and learning together. As someone who had never done a television show before, it was a learning process for me when I started working on Bar Rescue in 2010. It debuted on Spike TV in July 2011, just as it was a learning process for Maria when she went into radio. Even though I knew little about the business of actually making a television show, I knew that Bar Rescue was a great idea for a reality program and that I was the right person to do it. I had the personality and the background. I could learn the technical stuff. I had some idea of what to expect, but there were many surprises, and some of my assumptions about making television were challenged. I depended on the smart television people around me to help me acquire the skills and knowledge to make sure the show expressed the vision I had for it. Early in the show's run, I was co-executive producer because I relied upon the expertise of television professionals over my own. Now, 6 years and 150 episodes later, I'm the executive producer of Bar Rescue, and I rarely trust anyone's opinion over mine. But even running my own show, I still never stop learning about ways to improve it, make it more exciting, and maintain viewer engagement. Every season has seen an increase in our reach and fan base. Approximately 71 million unique viewers have watched season 4 of Bar Rescue. That's about 25% of the television universe. People have many choices when deciding how to spend their media time, and I want them to choose my work again and again, so I must keep learning and making it better. People also have choices of where and how they spend their money. If you want your business to keep its core customers happy, and if you want to continually add new business, you can't stop learning. You can't believe you know enough or know it all. Circumstances, demographics, tastes, and trends are continually shifting. If you don't keep up, you'll be left behind. There are opportunities to learn and expand every day. Take them or lose. DBY to-do list. Expand your job whenever possible. Instead of refusing to do something that's not in your job description, jump at the chance to learn a new skill and spend time with people whom you don't see often or at all. Not only will your opportunities for advancement improve by showing you're willing to pitch in, you can learn all sorts of valuable lessons and gain important insights into your business and people. Learn for longevity. You may not be the CEO of a large company, but you are the CEO of your own life. No matter what role you play in your industry, whether you are a boss, a middle manager, or just starting out, you're never too advanced or important to ask questions, listen, and look for direct sources of information. Continual learning is an investment in your future success. Don't wait until you know everything to start. There's never a perfect time to start a new project or business. Start now and learn as you go. Access what's available and devote the right resources to learning. There are numerous free and low-cost learning tools online and in your own community. That means there really is no excuse not to acquire skills and knowledge. Time isn't even an excuse, because everyone has at least a few minutes a day that they can use to prioritize learning. Learn from those you serve. Pay attention to your constituents and stakeholders, whoever they may be. You can learn a lot from the people who count on you for services and products. Chapter 3. Excuse number 3. Time. So what do we do? Anything. Something. So long as we just don't sit there. If we screw it up, start over. Try something else. If we wait until we've satisfied all the uncertainties, it may be too late. Lee Iacocca, American Automobile Executive. Excuses based on lack of time and a false sense of overwhelming business. I don't have enough time. I'm being pulled in too many directions. Someone or something is stealing my time. Whether you complain that you are overworked and overextended, or you believe that other people, obligations, or competing loyalties are forcing you to postpone or cancel your own aspirations or dreams, you're basically saying one thing. You are inefficient. Yes, it's your fault. It's bullshit, and you can change that. When we talk about equality in life, the one thing that we all have in common, and in the same quantity, is time. I'll go so far as to say that how we use our time defines our lives. Each day when we awaken, we all have 24 hours. We can use those hours wisely, or we can make up excuses and use them poorly. Time used well bestows incredible benefits. It helps us make more money, forge important relationships, and break down adversarial ones. It creates camaraderie and allows us to bond with those whom we love and respect. It brings us joy and the chance to experience the world. Time used wisely offers these things and so many more. Conversely, not appreciating time or understanding its value can lead to life's greatest losses. Not calling my mother for such a long time is an example of how we can fritter away the gift each day gives us. The refusal to reach out to my mother placed a chip on my shoulder, and I sometimes wonder how my life would have been better had I not allowed myself to let that happen. It's very personal, but should serve as a cautionary tale for anyone who is thinking about throwing time away. We cannot get back wasted time. I see people paralyzed by time wasters like checking email and social media, and bogged down by simple tasks they could easily delegate. The amount of time we devote to social media proves that we have plenty of time for the things we like. No, you're not too busy. Maybe you just need to rethink your priorities. It's not that you don't have enough time, it's that you are not assessing and valuing your time properly. A 2014 study published in the Journal of Consumer Research shows that the natural inclination to categorize time is to put it in present and future boxes. When we classify a deadline as a future goal, we put it in the someday file and are more likely to neglect it. Those future time goals may nag at us, but we rarely get them done. When we term something as a current responsibility, we're likely to start working on it right away. The problem is that many of the current tasks may be less important than the future tasks in terms of our long-term aspirations. For instance, getting a project done on deadline is important, but plotting out goals you need to reach over the next 6 months in order to get a promotion and a raise is crucial. If you have trouble spending your time wisely, you're not alone. Consulting firm McKinsey & Company asked 1,500 executives how they spent their time. Only 9% of the respondents said they were very satisfied with the way they allocated their time. That's very low. Less than half were somewhat satisfied, and a full one-third were actively dissatisfied. Only 52% of the respondents said they spent their time in a way that mirrored their company's strategic goals. Nearly half said they didn't concentrate enough on guiding the strategic direction of the business. If executives feel this way about the way they are spending their time, we can assume that other workers feel similarly. When was the last time you felt incredibly productive, like you absolutely nailed everything on your daily to-do list? Procrastination puts you off your game. Procrastination is a belief that time is not going to go away. Yet as anyone who has ever missed a cutoff date or been up against an April 15th tax deadline knows, time is finite. Moreover, we will die someday. As the great artist Pablo Picasso said, "Only put off until tomorrow what you are willing to die having left undone." Unfortunately, procrastination feeds on itself. It's an addictive behavior, like smoking or overeating. And like these negative habits, it can have devastating consequences. Just because you feel lazy or uninspired, it happens to all of us, doesn't mean you have to indulge those feelings and give in to them. Okay, so you're not in the mood to revamp your accounting system or tackle some other large project. I doubt you'll feel any more inspired to do it in a week or two, though. If you are procrastinating, ask yourself, is my future important enough to do this, or some of it, today? This question takes you to someplace very deep. Will I move forward or will I stay in my cage? Procrastination is not just a benign part of human nature, it can be harmful. A friend of mine, I'll call Howard, was focused on opening a world-class nightclub in Miami. Rather than pushing to get it done quickly, he procrastinated, delayed, and opened 6 months later than he had planned.